Hello
Thank
and welcome to the I Am Jen Wilson, the Healing Rebel podcast. And I am very excited about today's guest, Jean Fenwick, who we met online through the Glasgow Girls Club, as many of previous guests have been. And we had a chat online, oh, must have been 2020, I think. We had a conversation.
Yeah, it must be that. Well, certainly towards the end of 2020, Jen, I would
Yeah.
think. Yeah.
And then it was last year, 2023, that we did.
It was, but do you know what? I was thinking about this, when you said, when was it we met and what did we start doing together? And of course, my memories popped up this week because it is yesterday, a year ago. So the 11th of March, 2023. That we did the Thrive Through Menopause workshop together. Do you know that wee mini retreat that we did? That was a year ago. But we also did, you came along and you were just a fantastic guest for me when I ran the Five Senses mini retreat. Do you
Yes,
remember that one?
that was first. That was
That was
before.
the first one that you came and worked with me on. And I was just so delighted that you joined us, Jen, because that was all about how we can use the five senses to enrich our life and bring joy into our life. And I'd come across you in Glasgow Girls, and we'd spoken a few times, and I thought, I need to do something on movement. And you were just the obvious person to come to. So I thought, class, Jen, but it's a long way for her to trekkle her way all the way to East Lothian. And I think at that time you were coming. You're coming, you know this area anyway.
Yeah, because I sometimes go on holiday. Like I go to
Yeah.
get parks around that wee neck of the woods. So yeah.
And it was just meant to be. It was just meant to be. And then so it was obviously we got to know each other a lot better during the Five Senses retreat. And then, oh, when I was doing Five Senses, the girls at Oils and Bloom who were also involved in that kept saying to me, oh, Jean, you really need to do something on menopause. You need to do something on menopause. And I thought, oh, do I really need to? And then I just thought, okay, I'm going to do something on menopause, and that's when we got that one together last March. So yeah, a whole year ago that
That was a year ago.
we're
I would have
working
said
together.
6 months. I
Yeah.
was that was at the end of last year. I didn't think it was a year ago.
Doesn't time just fly? It just weeks past.
Yeah.
And the older you get, the faster it goes, Jen.
I know, so I'm experiencing.
And happy 45th birthday, you youngster, you. That's great. And thank you for inviting me on here to have a wee chat with you today.
Thank you for coming. So after that wee trip down memory lane, why don't you introduce yourself and share with the listeners the world that you immersed from?
Yeah, what I do and how I got here, maybe. So, yeah, maybe best to start by sort of saying hello, everybody. I'm Jean Fenwick. My business is Inner Wealth, and I am a midlife empowerment coach. So, yeah, that's in a nutshell, my business and what I do. But it probably would be useful to sort of unpack some of that because, this whole area of coaching, what does midlife, what's midlife? What do you mean by midlife? People always ask me. I've had girls say to me, well, I'm midlife, yeah, I am. They're in their 40s. And I think, well, you want it to be really.
Yes, you are.
And I did a lot of studies on this because, when I first started my coaching business, there was a lot of talk out there is that you've got to niche down. You've got to have a niche and you've got to niche down. And I was like, well, no, I don't want a niche. I just want to help everybody. And then it sunk in the lot of the further down the road I went is, yeah, I need to be, working with women that I get, that get me. And I definitely was in that end of midlife age bracket. So the midlife thing just came to me as an area that I wanted to work in. And so what does midlife mean? And it does actually mean anything you want it to mean, because who wants to put any labels on anybody else? So if you feel your midlife, but it's more about what we experience in midlife. So typically, if I were to put an age bracket on it, saying that, we don't need to put that bracket on, but midlife is generally anywhere from about 35 through to 60. So it's a very, very broad 5 years actually, a really, really broad age span and broad part of our life cycle where we're in that middle bit, you know, that middle bit. And I love the quote that Brené Brown has on you know, that bit. She says the middle is messy. And that is true because when we're in that middle bit of life, it's usually when we are at our busiest, when we are the most giving to other people, where we've maybe built a career and it's like full on, where we're in the middle of all sorts of lifestyle challenges. And so it is that messy middle. You know, and that messy middle that I experienced, you know, my middle, when I hit my middle, it was, you know, it wasn't just messy, it was bloody jet. You know, it was really, you know, it was like horrific. When I look back now to me in my early 40s, as I was, you know, coming into that period, personally, I was in a really busy, high-powered, well, I don't know if you'd call it high-powered, but to the external world, it was probably, you know, a really busy, big job that I had in the corporate world. My background is in the recruitment industry. So I had a lot of experience of helping individuals to make career transitions and to get out of the jobs they hated and into something that was going to suit them better. And I've been doing that since I was in my 20s because I got into recruitment when I was quite young. I just sort of fell into it by accident. I don't think anybody has on their CV, you know, on their wish list when they're 12, you know, I want to be a recruitment consultant when I grow up. But neither do I think they say I want to be a life coach when I grow up. So,
They
you
might be
know.
doing, but do you know what the word that's coming to me when you're just sort of describing all this sort of section in life that some people
Yes.
in other areas of life refer to as like the mother phase. So like you've got the maid and the mother, the crone, and that 35
Yes.
is very much the mother. Whether you ever birth a child and be a mother, it's that energy that you have in the world of nurturing and nourishing other people, yourself, your career, whatever that may be.
It is exactly that, Jen. You know, that's a great way to define it too. It's in that period where we're giving, you know, and we operate very much, or the lots of us operate on that. You know, I should be doing this and I should be doing that, and I have to do this and I have to do that, and you know, we have to get in order to feel that we're succeeding in life. So it's about, you know, getting the career that we want, getting the, you know, maybe the partner we want, the house we want, the car we want, the external life that we want. And you know, often when we get to this stage in our life, like it was for me, on the outside everything looked pretty rosy. You know, on the outside everything looked great. You know, I had a high powered job, I had a really nice partner, I had a lovely home, I had a better car than I've ever had since then, since I gave up my corporate job. You know, with a big flash car, and now I run around to my wee Honda Jazz, and I love it. But you know, on the outside, everything looks shiny and together, and you know, you've made it, kind of a. But it's what's happening inside. You know, inside, it doesn't feel like that at all. You know, it's like that, you know, hamster wheel. You know, got to go 10 to the dozen to keep up. I was very highly driven. I worked in a very much a sales oriented environment. So, you know, it was all about targets and achieving. And, you know, I was somebody that needed to see my name, if not on top, at least in, you know, that top three or four or five of the top performers list. And I would have said that that's where I got my buzz from, you know, feeling, yes, I'm doing and I'm achieving. But inside, you know, when that middle period hit, and I know now looking back, I was in the early stages of my perimenopause, although back then they didn't, you know, there was no such thing as perimenopause. We hadn't heard of it. But when all that started to go adrift, then I started to unravel, and life got really, really difficult for me. And I realized now looking back that I had been over promoted. At the time, I'd have told you I can cope with everything. But looking back on it, I had been given a job that actually was a bit too stretching for my level of competence. But I was striving to really achieve and kind of fashion myself into that person without really feeling that I don't know whether I was worthy of it, whether, I did it because I felt it was what I should be doing rather than what was lighting me up. So I was driven by this sort of what I call workaholic drive.
Still a thought that really that champions that. Like if you think, is it Richard Branson's, like, just say yes and learn how to do it on the way, which is fine for men. But when you're then
Absolutely. I remember when I got that job, the guy who was the managing director of the company I worked for at the time, they had they'd lost somebody out of the business and they were looking for somebody to take it over. And because I had it was to run their accountancy division, which had multiple branches across the UK, and it was a bit of a step up for me, because I'd been regional at that stage, so I'd never, managed an individual business unit. And it had, a fair few staff, and I was going to be responsible for, bottom line profit and everything. And I remember saying to this chap then, "Oh, why me? Why have you picked me to do this?" And he said to me, "Because you know something about accounts, because you've got your accountancy qualification. Just get in there. You know what to do." And I said, "But," and he said, "And don't fuck it up." Was his last words to me. He said, "And don't you fuck it up." So it was a bit like, "Here I am giving you this gift, and don't fuck it up," And I think that little voice was in the back of my head the whole time. Don't fuck it up. But if I'd listened to my initial gut instinct was, "I don't know how to do this. It's too big for me." Anyway, long story short, I crashed out of that.
I think people get so scared that if you are offered that promotion or that next step up, that if you say no, that's not the right thing for me, that you're then a failure because you haven't taken this step up. When sometimes staying where you are, knowing your personality, your skills, what it is you actually want. I've got a friend who works for a like corporate type company, and her boss is always trying to push her to move her forward, and she's like, but I'm very good at what I do, where I am, and I'm happy. Why do you want to change that? But their whole business model is step up the ladder, step up the ladder, step up the ladder, step up the ladder, because it makes them more money, because they can then charge other people more because this person's a higher level.
Yeah, absolutely. And they, as they say, the best doers don't always make the best managers. And I've managed big teams. I didn't enjoy management. I actually didn't enjoy it. And as you can see, hindsight's a great thing, as you can look back and learn. And this is the wonderful thing about, for me being, being a more on the mature end is, I can see a lot of the mistakes I made. And then when I'm working with women at that level who feel that pressure, just invite them to look at, because that may be the right thing for them. It may be the right thing for them, and that's great. And then looking at how do they manage that step up without, getting their life out of balance using, the wheel of life. How do they keep in balance other parts of their life? How's that going to affect looking at the ecology of it? So what does that mean to the rest of your life? And other times it's a case of, well, when we start looking at their values, and I know that you're huge on values, and values underpin everything I do. Anybody that comes to me has to do a session on values. So if you're out there and you're thinking you might want to work with me, then you'll be working with values, because it underpins everything, doesn't it? Yeah, it is vital.
Values before, and if you don't know what your own values are, you are just going to say yes to other people and not to yourself.
That's absolutely it, Jen. Unless you know what your values are. Like, I didn't know back then. I hadn't a clue. I'd never looked at values. If you'd asked me what values were, I'd reel off things that I felt I should say. And people still do that with me, and probably with you as well. They'll tell you the values that they think they should have, or they'll tell you the values of their group, their tribe, their family, whatever. But when you do a deep dive on values elicitation, as you'll know, you get to the core of, is this value yours, or is it somebody else's? And I do that under a sort of state of not deep hypnosis, but of trance. So I use trans work to elicit the values. So we're, you know, out of our thinking mind and into our feeling body.
Yeah. Yes.
When we connect in with those values, so we're connecting authentically with who we really are. And it was sort of digressing. If I'd known my values then maybe I wouldn't have made that mistake. And also if I'd been braver, because I think it would have taken a lot of courage to actually say to this really, really senior person, no, you know, and I didn't have the assertiveness skill then to be able to make that boundary. And maybe if I'd discussed it with other people, which I didn't do. So part of me was really proud that I'd got this big job, this big promotion, big pay rise, big car and everything. Anyway. So I crashed out of that. I eventually got back into training, which is part of the role that I had done in the lead up to that. I was training manager for this corporate recruitment company, and that was something that I absolutely loved. And when I was working as trainer, then I was introduced to coaching and the concept of coaching, which way back then, because we're looking sort of probably 80s, late 80s into the early 90s, coaching was still one of these sort of fairly new terms around the block. So quite lucky I got into it quite early. So I was trained to coach, I was trained to train. I love developing people. I love developing my people that worked with me. And that's where I was introduced also to NLP. So fast forward, because there's a lot of years in between with an old girl like me to fill in. We've only got an hour. So fast forward, I set up my own recruitment business in the year 2000, which is the first business I set up. And then I came back to Scotland in the year 2006 and set up a second recruitment company in Scotland. So I was running two recruitment businesses at that time. And then that was wonderful. I was working for myself. I was my own boss. I wasn't managing people. I managed the process for clients, big businesses. I managed the recruitment business. And I absolutely loved it. Had a ball, really, really enjoyed it because I was working true to my values, which are all about helping people find the right role, helping organisations find the right people. So I was aligned, absolutely loved it, but still working really long hours because recruitment is long and it's, you know, talking to people after hours, etc. So my mother had always said to me, why are you working so hard, dear? You know, why are you working so hard? And I used to always say, but I love it, you know, and if I'm loving what I'm doing, it doesn't feel like work.
And
that is really it, isn't it? If we love what we do, it's easy to do and it doesn't feel like work. So I absolutely enjoyed what I did up to, fast forward to 2019, in the November of 2019, I found a wee lump in my neck by accident. I had a rash that came up. I went to the doctor, they examined the rash, and the wee locum doctor who examined my neck said, you've got a lump in your neck. So fast track through, you know, the cancer piece, had to have my thyroid out. They found it was cancerous, but very slow growing. So I'm very, very lucky. And at that time, my mother, who had looked after, you know, I was a carer to my mum. She had Alzheimer's, and she passed away just after I had my diagnosis.
Oh my God.
But a week after my mum passed, so it's a week this year, COVID hit and we all went into lockdown. Or COVID was already there, but the whole world went into lockdown. So it was like, I was a wee bit impervious to that at the time because it was a bit like, I was coping with my thyroid, I was coping with mum's passing, I was coping with everything in life, my business, trying to run all of that and juggle all the balls, as we all know. And then COVID hit, so it was just... world kind of stopped for a wee while, didn't it? And we were in that period of a couple of weeks where we really didn't know whether we're all going to die or live, and well, thank God we got through it, or the majority of us got through it, and you know, bless you if any of your loved ones didn't. But it just came to me, you know, why am I working so hard? I can do something different now. And from being somebody that up until the last end of 2019, absolutely loving what I'm doing, and stopped that and decided I was going to be a life coach. And I was going to start a business as a life coach. And interestingly, just the year after I started my training, I looked in a journal from 10 years ago, and it said, at such and such a date, I'm going to have X in the bank. I'm going to have left recruitment. I'm going to be working as a life coach. Now, I didn't have X in the bank. I didn't manage that one, but I did manage to get, and I'd forgotten all about that. That was something I'd planned. So yeah, that was it. So I took a 9-month deep dive into some of the modalities that I had touched on before that I wanted to be really competent and qualified in, and started Inner Wealth. And you know, that was 4 years ago. And here I am today. So God, thanks for listening to that try.
So why inner wealth? Like, 'cause a lot of people think of wealth equals money, like cash in the bank. What does inner wealth
Exactly.
mean to
So
mean?
inner wealth, at the time I chose that name, so inner wealth meant everything looks fine on the outside, but inside you're lacking. There's a lack. So everything's shiny, everything looks great, everything looks healthy, wealthy on the outside, but there's no inner wealth. Inner wealth being my sense of well-being, my sense of emotional well-being, as well as physical well-being. I mean, I don't work in the movement area like you do, but you know, I do work with Reiki and energy. So it's about having that inner. Now, if I was to go back and change things, and I might do it sometime, change the company name, I can see that it's actually quite confusing. So inner wealth coach really doesn't mean anything to people that are looking in. It meant a great deal to me at the time because I knew what it meant, but people outside might not know what it meant. And then I worked with a coach who helped me define what it is that I did. And that's when I landed on, and it just felt great, you know, it landed with me, midlife empowerment coach, because that's exactly, you know, what I'm about and what I do. I work with women in midlife who are in the messy middle. And that might mean a whole host of different things that they have coming up in their life, but they're not happy. You know, they're enduring life, not enjoying it. You know, they're just going through the motions. And I help them create a life that they love. So that's what I do. I take them from where they are, where they don't want to be, and help them bridge that gap into, you know, what makes a wonderful life for them as an individual. And everybody's unique, everybody's different in terms of what that end result is going to look like, feel like, and be. And oftentimes on that journey, it might change for them. You know, they thought that's what they wanted, but actually it's not. And you know, it changes and it adapts and it evolves constantly. And I just love what I do. Absolutely love what I do. So I'm a happy bunny now.
This is out of you, like when you did that five senses day, the way that you just
Yeah.
held space for everybody and shared the wealth of knowledge that you have. And then on that, the menopause retreat, because you do talk a lot about menopause and that menopausal journey.
Yes.
I embarking into that journey and that those perimenopausal stages where I'm tracking everything, periods are starting to get a bit closer together. Some months I'm crazy, some months I'm
Yeah.
emotional.
And that is one of the first signs that any of us ever have that they're that, you know, that perimenopause part has started to happen. It can be one of the first signs is that, you know, the most noticeable thing can be that, you know, our periods either aren't as regular as they were, or you know, that they're heavier or lighter, or we're skipping, you know, we're skipping months. And then certainly we, you know, once we start to connect the dots. Wonderful thing now, Jen, is there's so much more information out there for women than there was when I went through that phase myself. I mean, I'm very much postmenopausal now. But then the good news to anybody who's in it, you know, it is a temporary phase of life and it does get better. And, you know, occasionally I'll still get, you know, some symptoms, but that's usually because I've not been doing the lifestyle things
So
that
much of
know
the
help. Yeah.
I had a massage client in on Saturday who is 40, she's just turned 45 as well, and we were talking about the rage, and she's like, it's the rage is wild because it just feels like it comes up out of nowhere. But I, when we were talking about it, I was like, but I think for so long, and part of this is a hormonal thing because we've not got as much progesterone, and I read or listened to somebody say that that progesterone is the pacifying hormone.
It is, so it is. Very much. Sure. We've got lots of progesterone when we're in baby, you know, when we're in baby making mode, you know, progesterone is very much, it's a nurturing, kind, calming. Yeah.
So part
chemical
of that,
for us.
Part of that rage is the chemicals are not there to support it, but also over that time, you have probably spit your tongue so many times and suppressed rage so many times that you're just like, fuck this, it's coming out.
Yeah. My husband, Duncan, and I've been with him since I was 24, so we've been together for, you know, a long, long time. We've got our 30th wedding anniversary later this year. When I was going through my menopause, when I was in perimenopause, and I went to see my GP, he said to me, could you ask him if he can give me something for your menopause? Because of course, you know, our family members, people that are close to us, they bear the brunt of the, you know, it feels horrible when we're in it. I felt like a strange woman had just taken over my body. You know, I just did not feel it was me. And I know a lot of women relate to that. But, you know, it is this rage and the hormonal roller coaster that we go on. There's the rage on the one hand and the tears out of nowhere on the next, you know, and just that, I think the frightening thing for me was I just felt that I wasn't in any control of my body or my state of mind.
Because then you didn't really, there wasn't the information for you to be able to ask yourself and say, all right, this is a hormonal fluctuation, whereas I track everything on a chart. Yes. So if I have a rage about something, Chris goes and checks the chart to see where I'm at. And he's like, that's fair enough. Or I'll be like, right, my period's due in a couple of days, we'll be all right, just ignore me until just let me have.
Yeah, because you know where you are on that 28-day cycle, and you can see how that affects you, not just physically but also emotionally, because, you know, the mind-body connection, we're, you know, it's all connected. And yeah, well, good luck on your journey, and I know how much work you do in terms of, you know, well-being to help support yourself. But sometimes, you know, sometimes, Jen, you've just got to hoot it out, hen. You know, as my good friend said to me. You just got to hoot it out. And I said, oh, I've never heard that expression before. You know, but it just, you know, it just is it. We've just got to accept that, you know, we're in it. We do everything we can to help, you know, us get through it. But some days we've just got to rage. You know, some days we've just got to pull the duvet over our head. Some days we've just got to scream and shout. And some days we've just got to cry our heart out. Whatever is happening is okay. You know, and I think that's the thing, is just to accept that, you know, this is a natural transition. Mm-hmm. It's a natural transition. And just as, you know, you might have had really bad problems with your periods, you know, that doesn't mean to say you're going to necessarily have a bad menopause, but I don't think there's any real scientific correlation between the two of those. But it's, you know, I like to explain it as, you know, we go into maybe baby making phase of life when we start menstruating. And then when we stop menstruating, we're stopping that baby making phase of life. So, you know, I think when we start to look at the menopause journey overall and start to reframe it in a way that isn't just, oh shit, I've got these symptoms, what am I going to do, you know, and start looking at the perimenopausal part of our life as part of that journey. It's a season of life that we're going through. So, you know, I would invite anybody who's in it to look at, you know, going with the flow, that's not too strong a word, not just your menstrual, but, you know, go with the flow or not, just go with it, you know, just ride it through, you know, use techniques and visualization techniques to help you go through it too. That helps. And, you know, I run a program, the Hypnomenopause Approach, which helps women with that transition using not just hypnosis, although that's part of it, because hypnosis has been scientifically proven to reduce the vasomotor symptoms, you know, the hot flushes and the night sweats, by up to 40-odd%. I can't remember if it's 42 or 44, somewhere around 40%, but that got quite big. But that also uses, we use, you know, mindset work and CBT and whatever the woman needs in those sessions. Again, it's very individually targeted to wherever that woman is in her journey. And we also use some hypnosis sessions to help a woman use self-hypnosis. So when, you go into a really bad night sweat, or, you're having, panic attacks, that you find a way within yourself to be able to self-regulate. And that's a really, really useful skill. And I know that you use hypnosis as well, Jen. So that being able to access our inner state in a self-hypnotic way can be really, really beneficial to us being able to manage that transition.
Yeah,
So
I think because I saw recently that the NICE guidelines, which is the guidelines that the doctors in the medical world use, that CBT had been added
has.
to the guidelines. And I also saw some doctors being outraged by this, which I was really confused by, because I'm very much lifestyle first, medicate last. So if you can give people
Me too.
tools where they can manage a lot of the symptoms through mindfulness work, meditation work, how they're nourishing their body through the food, through
Yes.
just alcohol, moving their bodies for exercise, all these other lifestyle practices, get all them in place first and then see what's left over so that you know what it is you're actually medicating. Otherwise, you're just
100%.
throwing pills, crossing your fingers and hoping for the best.
You've hit the nail, Jen. Absolutely hit the nail on that. It's easy to pop a pill, you see. It's easy to, I think it's sad, isn't it, that we've got, I don't know if it's 5, 10, 15 minutes on a session with a doctor, but they're all overstretched. So it takes longer to dig deeper and be able to give support that is, more holistic to women when they go in. But it's not surprising. I mean, the medical profession is, it's not particularly set up to help us as females, is it? It's only in the last few years they've started to, get the menopause thing and start, thinking about how we can give more women, HRT, if that's the route they decide to take and that's what they need. So, I think these other things are. But yeah, I find that women who come on that program are absolutely astonished at how easy it can be to alleviate so many of those symptoms. Not all the time, because nothing's perfect. There are some days where it's just going to be nothing. It's a bit like if you've got pain, no matter how many, paracetamol or Cocodamol you take that day, nothing's going to touch it. It can be a bit like that also with, one of these extreme days that we're going to maybe experience through the perimenopausal journey. But I also think it's important to recognize that, severe symptoms only affect 25%-ish of women. Severe symptoms. I fell into that cohort of 25% with severe symptoms. I had a terrible moment. Yeah.
Yeah. What was
Pardon?
classic? Your symptoms.
Where severe symptoms, so that it is interfering with your lifestyle on a day-to-day basis, i.e., you're having to take time off work, you can't function, that would fall into, and they're doing some work at the moment on the disability piece there, aren't they, in terms of, do we, call perimenopausal symptoms a disability? And the answer to that, in my view, is no, not for the majority of women, but yes, for those who are suffering at that level, because it can be really, really extreme. There were days I couldn't go into work, I couldn't function. Yeah, but different for everybody, because there's different types of symptoms that would affect them to that degree. But on the other hand, you've got 25% of women who get off relatively scot-free, apart from stopping their periods. My auntie Isabel, who's 92 now, was one of those fortunate women, could not understand my mum's menopause. Why is she, what's wrong with you? And this was a woman talking to a woman. And so I think as women, there's that cohort of women get off scot-free. I see it in some of the comments on, some of the articles, oh, for crying out loud, and coming from women. And I think, well, aren't you the lucky ones? You're in that cohort who are getting through it scot-free. And then we've got 50% in the middle who will experience, varying symptoms at varying levels of severity at various times through their journey.
Yeah, and they can be at either that 50% can be at either end of that spectrum. Like they could be just under severe, but it's still pretty bad. Just over where it's a little bit disruptive, but not the end of the school. So there's like the rainbow and within that as well.
Absolutely, Jen. It is that spectrum piece in terms of where it is. But you know, the good news is there's a lot more awareness about it. The good news is there's lots of things that we can do from a lifestyle factor about it. The bad news is, you know, if you've got severe, you know, symptoms, you know, you have to just get through it, and it's not nice at times, and it's not, you know, it feels awful. But you know what I encourage women to do is to discuss it with their family, you know, to get that whole secret, you know, she's got through the change,
Yeah.
like that, not spoken about. But to speak about, we're better about speaking it with each other as women, but we also need to talk about it with our partners. We also need to talk about it with our children. We also need to talk about it with our wider family as well as our colleagues, so that we're not carrying that burden alone, you know, and without any, you know, without any shame, without any negative connotations, and that it just becomes an acceptable part of who we are as women, that there's no negatives, it's just, this is just part of it, and that they understand that it's nothing personal. And you know, it's no surprise that the highest divorce rate, the highest divorce rates are in that messy middle period of perimenopause, those 10 odd years that you can be from beginning your perimenopausal journey to getting out the other end. There's, you know, there's lots of work that I do with women on the relationship part and how they're managing their relationship with their partner from both the emotional side and also the physical side, because physically it becomes, you know, more difficult when we get drier to have sex and maybe want it as often. Yeah. So I'm not afraid to talk to women that come to me about the, you know, the relationship side and the sex side as well. That's an important part of our lives.
Yeah, I'm just thinking some of that divorce rate will be women being brave enough to stand up and say, no, this is not right, because of that progesterone dropping down, that they're getting the courage to say, no, this is not acceptable for me anymore. But then there will also be the other part of the relationship's broken down because the conversation about what's going on hasn't been had.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's that conversation that hasn't been had, and the woman's carrying it on her own. Her partner doesn't understand. This is just broad speaking, you know, broad brush. And this is absolutely not for everybody. There can be all sorts of things going on in that relationship that, you know, would have nothing to do with the perimenopause at all. But, you know, if that, it's all about connection and being able to have that conversation and be able to be open and honest with your partner about it. And I would say if you're in a perimenopause state of life, to have that conversation is going to be useful. So whether they take that on board and support you or not is another matter, but at least you've given the opportunity to support. And if they're not supporting you, then you know, that's a tough gig. It's a bloody tough gig, because at least I had support. You know, Duncan was very supportive throughout, even though he wanted doctor to give him something for my menopause. Overall, he was supportive. I'm very lucky that I've got a supportive man.
Yeah, I'm fortunate as
Yeah.
well because when we were only seeing each other for 6 months when I got first diagnosed with Crohn's. So he
Okay.
came in on this when I was fit and healthy, in air quotes, when I was a fitness fanatic. And what he signed up for wasn't what he got. And
Oh,
then to
Jen, yeah.
the perimenopause as well on top of that. But he just, I'm very fortunate, he just takes it all in his stride and he's just like, oh yeah, whatever. That is what it is.
That's
So.
right. Because that's unconditional love. You know, you know, that's the love that we want. It's unconditional loving you for who you are, not what you do or, you know, or don't do at any case in AD, but just loving you for who you are. I did my life coaching with the training that I did, the, you know, 9 months intensive that I did with a woman. It was an international cohort that I was in, and we did it with a younger woman in the US who'd been an athlete, Jen, and had And then she sustained an injury that meant she could no longer compete. And it was quite interesting. So she chose as her niche helping other female athletes who were injured to be able to cope with and find a new route and find new purpose in their lives. Just when you told me about, because somebody as active as you are to then have that dragged away. But look at you, how you've managed to, pivot and use that experience to find a different way to be able to still be able to help people with well-being. Yeah, it's awesome. Awesome. You do so much.
That's
Laughing
how
awe of you sometimes. I look at you've got, you do so much out there. You've always got so many courses and sessions that you're doing, and yeah, you're phenomenal.
It's very, oh, thank you. It feels very untidy, but that's what my head feels like, very untidy. Like, I'm so, oh, I need to know about this, and oh, I need to know about that, and oh, I need to know about the next thing. And I'm in the process of learning my boundaries of what can I teach and what can I share. So I helped
Sure.
with that Thriving Through Menopause workshop together, and I've kind of dabbled in a little bit of menopausal coaching, but also I'm like not fully immersed into that because I've not experienced that. I'd much rather pass somebody who's way further down the journey,
Yeah,
like you're
further
saying,
down the line. Yeah.
this person here has actually been through it. I'm in the process of going through it.
The great thing is, I think there used to be this sort of sense of in business, and certainly when I was in the corporate world, is that we're all competing against each other, and now there's so much more collaboration. And I think, isn't that so lovely that, we can work together within the same space, within the same field, with, the same, cohort of women, but there are lots of different women that bring their own unique gift to that space. Whether, whether that be on whatever level. And I think that's great that we're able, as women to come together and, and join together and partner together and help each other. I think that's one of the wonderful things about, being a woman is that innately we, we'll fix a problem by sitting down and having a cup of tea rather than creating. Yeah, but Duncan always says they should just put women in charge and we'll be fine.
Yeah,
But,
well, if you even think back to the tribal days when we lived in small communes, the women would all work together to feed the village, to look after all the children. Everything was all very communal, whereas the men would maybe go out as a group, but then they would separate off to go and do their
Yeah.
killing or whatever they were out to
And
do.
a very interesting thing to know about, the tribal communities that I found out when I was researching sort of the menopause space is in some of the, tribal communities, and there's numbers of them dotted around the world, in Africa and in South America. And once a woman reaches postmenopause, her childbearing years are over, then she elevates her position within the tribe to becoming an elder
Amazing.
and possibly a healer. And it's possibly then she makes that journey into her shamanic phase of life. So very much coming back to that. That phase that you were talking about before, that mothering phase, when we are no longer of, when our periods stop, basically, then isn't that lovely that that can mean a move into a wonderful phase that, doesn't mean to say things have stopped or that we're slowing down or, it's over. And the other stat that I just want to throw in while we're talking about menopause, just because people out there, women out there, I hope, if you're listening, you'll be interested in this, is that, in today's world, we live a third of our life post-menopause. Third of our life post-menopause. Now, I think that's a really interesting stat to take on board because only a century ago, the average age of life for a woman in the UK was 59. That was the average age. Now, that's 8 years younger than I am just now, Jen. 59 was the average eight lifespan, and today it's into the, into the 80s. It's 83 or 84, I can't remember which, but there's almost another 24 or 25 years that we've got that our great grannies wouldn't have had. So we are the generation, we are the first generation of women that are coming through with, a life ahead of us with, to live. And which is why I get really excited about working with the women that I do, because it's about letting them see, this huge chunk of life you've got left, right? What are you going to do about it? What does that look like for you? Who are you going to be now that you don't have the labels? Now that you don't have the roles? Because, like, a woman who I coached this morning, she just come to me. Her two wee girls are grown up now and they're teenagers, and that mothering phase is coming over. She's coming to the phase where she's not needed as much by them, and she's reached a point where it's almost the existential crisis for her. Oh, shit, what next? What is that going to look like for me? What do I really want that to look like? And if there's any area that I have that I believe is possible gift, it's been able to take women from that, haven't a fucking clue about what I really want to do with my life. Or the women that go, well, I don't know, I'm really not sure. And being able to help them get clarity around what that might look like. So the program that I would take them through would be looking at, let's get clear about what it is that you might want and might not want, and what that might look like for you, were you to get it. So let's get clear. And often that's not just about what you might be doing, but how will you be feeling? What do you want to feel? What do you want to be experiencing in your life? Because we can fill in the gaps of what do you need to do to feel that. But once we get able to identify that, and that's again where values come in, because once we know your values, and then the work that I do with them in that middle phase after we get clear is to look at, how do we remove the blocks? So what's stopping you? What might stop you from getting there? And so we look at whatever those blocks might be, obvious limiting beliefs are things that might be stopping them. It may be in some cases that there's some trauma there. So I'll usually work with women on, the sort of five significant emotions, with the sixth one added on, which is usually one that will. The work that I've done with these women, this last one, the sixth one, comes up more often than you would think. So the emotions that I work on, anger, sad, yeah. So there's the five key ones, and then there's the sixth one that comes up. So there's, sorry.
So what are the five key ones?
So the five key ones are anger, sadness, fear, hurt, and guilt. Anger, sadness, fear, hurt, and guilt. Yeah, anger, sadness, fear, hurt, and guilt. So, going through the journey of looking at how has anger affected your life, and often as women, we suppress our anger, so it doesn't come up, or it comes out in frustration, or it bubbles up and comes out in inappropriate outbursts with inappropriate people in inappropriate places at inappropriate times, usually.
I
Perimenopausal or not, it's that the volcano exploding, that anger. So looking at, let's have a look at, where that anger's come from, and how we manage that anger, and how we can, clear it. All emotions are valid, all our emotions are, there's no such thing as a bad negative emotion, but we think they're bad, especially as women, where a lot of us are taught not to express anger and not to show it, so we push it down. So I help them get it out. Let's get it out. So anger, sadness, fear, hurt, and guilt. We work through each of those. But the sixth one is shame. That sixth one is shame. And often when we go through, because if we do guilt, very often, shame is on the coattails of guilt. And I love that work. Yeah, I love Brené Brown. I love her, Gifts of Imperfection, and the work that she does around allowing ourselves to be vulnerable enough to look at shame. And if I was to choose one thing that lights me up more than anything, but the work that I do is helping women who have shame at that level, that feeling of, I don't deserve it. I'm not good enough. There's something wrong with me, not because of anything I've done, but because of who I am. Then that part of the work that I do is the stuff that lights me up no end. And for that reason, I'm choosing to work a lot more one-to-one with women now, because I've identified that that gets me up in the morning. It gives me joy.
That would be quite difficult to work with in groups, especially around the guilt and the shame, because people don't want to admit what is actually what's in there. So it's much easier to work on one-to-one. It was Brené Brown that defined the difference between guilt and shame, wasn't it? Like guilt is shame as you, the person. Is that right?
Guilt, I think the way that she described it, I'd have to go back and look at the book, but I think the way she described it is, guilt is I've done something wrong, and shame is I am wrong.
Yeah. Yes, that's how I remember
Guilt is about something that you've done. And the other way that I was trained to look at, these things that people come to you with, was to look at, there's only three things that women really come to any sort of therapist or coach with if they're working on an emotional level, because of course the work I do, and this is why I don't just do career coaching, because I like working with emotions, I love working on an emotional level, is that, women either come feeling one of three things. They either feel it's hopeless, helpless, or they're worthless. And once I get to which one of those three is the real issue, then, what we're able to see as coaches, once we're able to identify that, is we're able to see underneath everything else. It kind of gives me a route map to what we really need to be working on with that person. And hopelessness means, it's impossible. What they're saying is that it's impossible. Well, it's impossible. And there are people that come. There's people that come to me that have tried everything. The people that probably come to you as well, Jane. I've tried everything and nothing works. Nothing will fix me. Mm-hmm. If women come with that, there's nothing that I can ever do, then they're saying that, it's not possible for them. Yeah. They're believing that it's absolutely not possible.
But then that would be classed as a limiting belief, right?
It would be classed as a limiting belief, absolutely.
And I would also think that although they're saying it and they think they believe it, they don't really believe it, otherwise they wouldn't come to you for help.
Exactly. They wouldn't come.
It's how they're living, but not their true belief.
Exactly. And there's a differential, and it's fascinating, the differential between hopelessness and helplessness. So helpless is, it's impossible. I've tried everything. Nothing ever works for me. But sometimes women will come and say, well, you have a passion. If you can't fix me, then that'll also say that,
I've done everything.
Okay, and I worked with a woman like this a couple of months ago, and she's now continuing with me because we got there. I might not have got there. It was luck more than anything that we just managed to hit the nail with her, because she was a blanket tough nut to crack. I hope you're not watching. Well, if you are, you were a tough nut to crack. But it was a bit like, I've tried everything, nothing ever works for me, nothing works, and she was one of those, I've tried that, but yeah, I've done that, yeah, I've looked at that, but understand that, yeah, I know that, all of that along the way, it's impossible, you're not going to be able to be the one that's going to actually get me out of this. It's called a sense of victimhood. Yep. And some individuals like to be in a sense of victimhood. It gives them that identity, and they like that identity, and they're welcome to it. I don't work with women that don't want to get out of that victimhood. Eventually, when you crack the nut, then it's how do you get into being empowered and taking charge of your life? And then, helplessness is that it, hopelessness is it's impossible. Helplessness is possible for other people, but not for me. And that's the subtle difference. I just can't do it. And there's another limiting belief. So, the level that we'd work on with somebody like that would be at the level of their capabilities, and maybe the level of there's some belief work there, some values work there. But what is your capability? What are your strengths? What are you good at? And then the last one, worthlessness. And from what I've learned through the work that I do with women, it comes up, I would say, at least 70% of the time with women I'm working with. You would never think it, and they would never think it. But when I have them in a slight trance and ask them to choose, that's the one. That's the one. And then when they're out of trance, what was it I chose? Worthlessness. Really? Oh, did I?
There would be shame attached to admitting that as well, isn't
There
there?
is. There is, which is why it's wonderful to be able to hold a safe space for someone who eventually is able just to, dig a bit deep and get that stuff out in the open. And it's not counseling that I do, it's coaching. But I can't move you to where you want to get to unless we're able to remove those blocks in the middle. And if we've still got hidden shit, then you're not gonna have sustainable change. Sustainable change is what it's about. Not just, oh, go to a coach and then go back to my old habits. We want to have sustainable change that's going to help you keep doing what it is that you want to do and love it and enjoy it. Life's to be enjoyed, not endured. I love that phrase.
It's too tough if you're just enduring it. Like it's a every day is a slog if you're not enjoying it.
And you know what gets us out of it? The thing that gets us to that point, Jen, where you're ready to make a change.
What?
Because a lot of people never get there. A lot of people, men, women, whatever, get to the end. And then it's that piece of having a regret at the end of life, which is the big change. And if you are one of those people that will just stay on that, rabbit wheel, hamster wheel, call it what you want, not living intentionally, not doing anything to improve your life emotionally, physically, spiritually. If you're not on a path where you want to do that change, you get to the end of your life, you have a regret. If only I had, if only I had had, the courage to live a better life, the courage to take that chance, to speak up for myself, to love more, live more, feel more. Those are the things that at the end of life that are really important. So the work that I really feel called to do is helping people get a life where they feel fulfilled so they can look back and think, yes. And the way that I help them do that in coaching is to help them create what I call their I am statement. Because I just made it up. I thought, what am I going to call this thing? I'm just going to call it an I am statement. It's basically their identity statement of who they are as women. So they leave with that very clear sense of who they are and who they are becoming. But most importantly, how they want to be remembered. How do you want to be remembered? And I'll ask women, how do you want to be remembered? I go, I don't know. Well, neither did I till somebody asked me. I didn't have a clue. I just thought, what a weird question. How do I want to be remembered? How do I want to be remembered? Well, I don't want to die, actually. But it's inevitable. We're only
Yes.
here for a very short space of time. How do we want to be remembered?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people get snapped into that. I don't want to live a life of regret when they get diagnosed with a health condition. Like you hear about that a lot with people that get. I know Gabor Maté, I was listening to Gabor Maté the other day, and he's like, so many people will say the best thing that ever happened to them was their health diagnosis because it stopped them in their tracks and made them reevaluate life. And as
That's
somebody like,
exactly what happened to me.
yeah, and me, like I
Yeah.
was just trundling on and I was loving what I was doing, but I was working 7 days a week. I was work teaching 20 plus classes every week. I was exhausted all the time. I still wasn't really making any money. So, and then it was taken away. And then when I was like, right, as I'm starting to get better, how do I actually want to be in the world? Like, what days do I want to
Yeah.
work? Talked about this last week when we were having that conversation.
Course,
But
yes.
self-employed is about setting your own boundaries, keep building the life that you want to live in and
Yes.
love. And how do you create that? And I was given the gift of being really unwell and having to slowly rebuild it, because if I had been well, I would have just kept going the way I was.
I love that you see that as a gift, Jen, but then of course, you would. That is that gift. It's that gift. It's a gift. And Brené Brown talks about the gift of imperfection, and it is so wonderful to be able to see our lives as not being perfect. And sometimes it's out of those bad times that we're able to, it's a bit like the Phoenix Rising, isn't it? We're able to rise up and actually be better than ever before, because something that on the face of it would be really tragic or bad or sad actually takes us on a new path that is going to make us happy and fill our lives with joy again. But I also lo love the quote by Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love. I use that a lot when I do lies, because she says, and this is very true, that nothing ever changes. Nobody's going to ever make a change until you get tired of the bullshit.
Yes.
You have to reach that point where you're ready to change. And anyone who comes to me, I'll say to them, I'll do this diagnostic with them to find out how ready they are actually to go on that journey. And it's a bit like, in 12-step programs, they have to hit a rock bottom, that rock bottom to be able to get back up again. It has to hurt before you're going to do anything to feel a lot better. And that's been my experience too, is there's usually crisis going on, like my kids are leaving, or a redundancy, or my husband's left, or I've got, whatever illness, or yeah.
I think it's important for people to not have crisis comparison, because obviously being diagnosed with an illness is very different to your kids growing up and leaving home. But for you as the individual, the worst thing that's ever happened to you is the worst thing that's ever happened to you. You don't have another experience outside of
Yeah,
that. So don't compare
exactly.
yourself or say, oh, but it's only this or it's only that. It's your thing, and if it feels like shit to you, then it feels like shit to you, and that's okay.
Absolutely. There's no judgment attached with any of that. I always think, we're all as unique as our fingerprint in so many ways. And the role of a coach and a therapist and it is to hold that space for someone to be authentically themselves without any judgment and without comparison. Because what it, and I know that you're a fellow NLP master, and so what we learn is, in we're all different, and the world isn't as it is, it's as we see it. The world that we see isn't as the world is. It's as we are seeing it. I don't think that went very well, but you know what I mean. I hope it makes sense at all. But we only see the world as we are. We don't see it as it really is. And so the role of a coach and a therapist is to be able to widen your perspective, and to be able to enable you to see things that you're not seeing yourself, because Our vision is really very much blinkered when we're in our own wee worlds. And, it's lovely to be able to help women get those blinkers off and to be able to explore other possibilities to be able to achieve their potential that they might never even have considered ever before as being possible for them.
Yes.
God. Yeah.
The world is your oyster.
It is. It is. Yeah. And if you want it, and if you don't want it, you don't have to go and get it. You don't have to feel, oh, I should be doing this, because it's what all my friends are doing, I should be doing this because society says I've got to have X, Y, Z by the time I'm 40 or 50 or whatever. I love the fact that we can just be individually, authentically ourselves. And I love being me now. I didn't love being me at all. I hated life when I was in that horrible, messy place. I wasn't enjoying life and I didn't like me. But now, I like me and I'm okay with other people not liking me. Yeah. I'm okay with other people not liking me, which I never was before. I thought everybody had to like me. I was a real people pleaser. And that's another wonderful gift to get to the place where, it's okay for people not to like me as long as I like myself. That's the most important. Because fear of being judged by other people, I find in the coaching that I do, Jen, is one of the biggest fears. Not fear of failure. It's not fear of failure. It's fear of what people think of us. Fear of what other people think of us.
I know a few people that are, oh, what will people say if I wear this colourful blouse or this, do this thing or say whatever? And I'm just like, who cares? They're not thinking about you. They're too busy being fearful of what judgment you have of them and vice versa. Like if you just get to the point where you don't care.
Yeah, it's a lovely place to be. It's a shame it's taken me so long to get here.
You don't
But
care what other people think about you, and then you're not judging them in fear of what, like, because it's a vicious, that judgment is a vicious recycle.
it is, it goes round, doesn't it? It's
Doing.
perception, 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 and
Yeah.
jumping off of that and just being comfortable being who we are, and being okay with who we are. It's okay to be you, it's okay to be me, and I want women who choose to work with me to be in that place either now or to want to get to that place where, they want to feel happy being themselves, irrespective of whether they're liked or loved by anybody else. The most important thing is to be able to feel okay within ourselves, because when we love ourselves, not in a, what's the word, not in a way, what's that?
Not in a narcissistic way.
Exactly, Jen. That's the word. I knew it was a brain fog coming in. Still happens from time to time, of course. When we're able to, let that go, then we're just able to be authentic.
That's beautiful. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we wrap up?
I think we've probably explored. Yeah, we've explored, I think. Yeah, I'm kind of a drying up here, Jen. I think that it's just been lovely to have a nice long chat with you. It's been great to explore all of these subject matters with you, and hopefully it's given you a wee bit of a, I don't know, a wee glimpse into the way that I work and how I work and what my work is about. I hope it's been useful. And yeah.
Any of these listening and want to connect with you or learn more about working with you, where is the best place for them to come to find you?
So probably the very best place is just to use the website, because it's very easy peasy. It's just www.jeanfennick.com. So that's straightforward. And then I'm also on Insta and I'm on Facebook, and I have a free Facebook group. I'll give a wee plug to that. Free Facebook group called Future Fabulous. If any of you women out there want a fabulous future and you want to hang out with, I think we've got about 400 odd women that are in there now. So within that group, but yeah, on Facebook and on Instagram, it's jeanfennick.innerwealthcoach. So I think that's something I might decide to change at some point, but for the moment, I'm jeanfennick.innerwealthcoach. Thank you for having me.
I will put all the links to that into the show notes so that if anybody wants to reach out, connect, join up with your group or anything, they will be able to do that fairly easily.
Thank you a million, Jen. It's been lovely.
Thank you so much.
Fantastic. And I shall see you when you come to Haddington next month. Or, yeah, look forward to that.
Yeah.
Bye.